Well, you win some and you lose some. It just so happens the one you lose is to your biggest, baddest rival. A complete update on LSU's National Signing Day Part 2. Meanwhile, Will Wade's Roundballers in Starkville for their toughest road test of the season. A preview there and much, much more. Hey, it's Hump Day, Wednesday, February the 6th, 2019.
Richardson spins, forgot the ball momentarily. Into Whiteside, hook shot up, and got it to go. Hassan Whiteside. Well, Whiteside, 10 of 11, shooting 24 points.
George takes the ball away, his third steal tonight. George across the timeline, crosses over, blows by Fournier, sidesteps Birch, spins a left-hand layup up and in. Paul George displaying his massive offensive arsenal with 29 tonight.
Ibaka takes it away, wouldn't let Embiid get to it. Kawhi Leonard down the floor, bunny hop in the lane, finds Ibaka cutting to the tin for a big-time dunk.
Holy cow, what a Wednesday we have for you and yours. Welcome aboard. Great to have you with us. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show, along with my main man, CD, producer extraordinaire, taking care of business. Yours truly, Jordy Helfberg here. Great to have you there, and wherever you may be and however you may be listening to us, we had a busy, busy day planned for you and yours. Yes, indeed. National Signing Day Part 2. LSU, with six openings, they have signed five. We'll get the very latest update from two of our analysts. In hour number one, Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com will share his thoughts. Hour number two, Billy Embody of Go247 Sports will give his thoughts. If you value ESPN, they've got LSU ranked as the seventh best recruiting class in the country. That is fourth in the SEC with Alabama yet again at number one, Georgia at number two, Texas A&M at number three. If you follow 247 Sports, they've got LSU at number five. So a nice day today, but it all came down to a 12:45 showing and signing in the city of A-Meet at A-Meet High School. First up, Devontae Lee, the athlete. Wide receiver, safety, whatever you want. He pulls the trigger and picks LSU, and the place goes crazy. Then Ishmael Sopcich comes up, the big defensive lineman. That's the one. That was the plum. That was the icing on the cake. Whatever cliche you want to use, that's what everybody wanted to do. And unfortunately for LSU, Sopcich committed and signed with LSU. Alabama has 24 ESPN top 300 recruits, which is absolutely ridiculous, insane. How Nick Saban does it year after year after year, how he can get them to think that they all will play quickly and they will all become stars there is amazing to me. For the eighth year out of nine, Alabama, the number one ranked recruiting class. So, your thoughts on does this put a damper on your day if you're an LSU football recruitnik? If they had gotten Sopcich, they'd have moved into the top five in ESPN, probably in the top three in the 247 Sports composite rankings. But they didn't. So it is what it is. They've got one more spot available. And we'll find out from our analysts what they think LSU will do with that and how LSU did. Eight of the top 10 Louisiana recruits stayed home and went to LSU. The two that got away, guess where they went? You got it. If they had gone to Auburn, to Florida, to Tennessee, to USC, Miami, Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, anywhere. Everybody would have a whole different viewpoint on this thing. I don't think LSU could have done anything more. I think they worked their posterior off on this thing. You can't get them all. You can't get them all. Also on the program today, we'll head out to Starkville, Mississippi, LSU, Mississippi State. Two teams very highly thought of. LSU in the top 25. Mississippi State getting back into the fold after a big win on the road at Ole Miss in their last outing. LSU trying to bounce back after their first loss in league play and trying to keep close to hard-charging Kentucky and still undefeated Tennessee. Big, big game on the road. It's a very good Mississippi State team that has a 10-1 record at home this year alone. They have had a great home court advantage throughout the last 2 years under Ben Howland's guidance. It's going to be a very, very difficult matchup. We'll get the keys to the game with John Brady, as he will be on the call of the game. Pre-game show 7:30 right here on 103.7 The Game, and the call of the game at 8 o'clock. So a late-night tip in Starkville for television purposes. It's a big, big game, maybe, other than the Duke-Virginia game this weekend, might be the second-best game of the week. It's that important and that significant for a lot of different reasons. So we'll delve into all of that. Michael Hugenin will join us in hour number two, as he does each and every Wednesday. We call it Hump Day with Hugenin, and we'll talk about how the rich get richer in recruiting and what the heck was Baylor thinking when they went to interview a persona non grata when it comes to the world of college football. So those stories and much, much more coming your way today. Meanwhile, the Raging Cajuns had a nice day today when it came to their signing class. And they've got, I'm going to read off the list, defensive lineman Jaquani Nelson from a junior college, quarterback Ja'Abi Magale of a JUCO college transfer as well. From Neville High School, outside linebacker Lakamian Franklin. Another outside linebacker from Neville, Andrew Gleason. An offensive lineman from Natchitoches, Louisiana, A.J. Gilley. Offensive lineman from the state of Mississippi, Tyler Brown. They got a kicker out of Texas named Grant Paulette. And an offensive lineman from Texas in King McGowan. So Billy Napier filling his class up to the rim. And we'll see how they develop and how they flourish under Billy Napier and his staff. So congratulations. Billy will be coming up on Ben Love's show after hours. All right? So he'll focus on the Raging Cajuns. I'll focus on the LSU Tigers. So we have a busy day planned for you and yours. Sit back and relax. When we come back, we'll let the experts analyze this stuff. They do it every day for a living, starting with Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. We'll get the names. We'll get the numbers. We'll get the rankings. We'll get the whys, the hows, and the whos. All coming your way next. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. We're 103.7 The Game. We're 103.7TheGame.com. We're proud of it. And we'll be back. Hump Day! Yes, indeed.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7TheGame.com, and on the app.
Well, you know, they shoot the three extremely, extremely well. They do a great job when they don't make threes of getting on the offensive glass. So they'll have to do a good job on Peters. And then obviously the Weatherspoon brothers are good. Carter's a good shooter coming off the bench. Holman shooting it well from the four spot. Freshman Perry's played as well as anybody in our league the last four or five games. So they're a talented group. They're very well coached. Coach Allen does a great job, obviously. And it'll be a big challenge for us guarding them.
The words of head coach Will Wade as the Tigers take on the Mississippi State Bulldogs, Humphrey Coliseum, 8 o'clock tip right here on 103.7 The Game, 103.7TheGame.com. If you dial it up, You'll hear our next guest, and he's a friend of the program, the former LSU head basketball coach, now color analyst extraordinaire. How about that? John Brady from Starkville, my friend. Starkville bringing back some memories for you?
Well, you know, I spent 8 years here as a
coach.
But I know. As the legend Skip Berkman used to say, Tibahaw is an Indian word for trailer park or something. I don't know what he used to say.
he used to love trashing the Ville, boy. He loved that. It's come a long way since when I played. Yes, indeed. LSU's got to bounce back. That game against Arkansas reminded me, other than the result, that place was jumping. That reminded me of LSU, Arizona, back when you had Stromile Swift and Jabari Smith, and that place was a crazy house, man. What a great basketball environment. I love it. I love it. I hated the result, but I love the environment.
There's no question about it. And you know, if LSU, in any sport, if LSU puts a good product on the floor, the fans will support it at a high, high level. And they showed up the other night. The team deserved to have that support based on what they've done. And you know what really was encouraging to me that I saw that made me really feel good about that fan base that was there?
Yeah.
Is in the second half when we got behind, they initiated standing up and cheering for the team to urge it on. Let's don't quit. Let's keep playing. And that team responded to the crowd, and it was really a great
thing
to see. And you know, when Will Wade put the press on, it got us rejuvenated, got our athleticism into the game. We turned them over and came back from 18, took a one-point lead two different occasions. And Jordy, you're right, that crowd, you've been there when you played for Coach Brown. Y'all had y'all built it to a frenzy, and we got it there a few times, and it was certainly there the other night. It was really fun to watch and be a part of.
Unfortunately, they won't be in the friendly confines. They're going to the hump, and boy, that place has been a tough place for teams to go in. They're 29-3 at home as Mississippi State the past two seasons. They're 10-1 this year. Now, granted, they haven't played the greatest of schedules, but they're still 10-1. So, a tough, tough venue. What are your thoughts heading into this one?
Well, when I look at these two teams, they both have good depth. They both are long. They're both athletic. They both have size around the goal. They both are perimeter driven for the most part. You know, Weatherspoon's an all SEC guard, point guard. Mm-hmm. Tremont Waters, all SEC point guard. They match up quite well, and the statistics of each team is almost identical in terms of overall and in SEC play. So there's really not much of an edge. I think what I'm going to look for tonight and what I'm going to try to follow is what I always go back to is the field goal stat.
Field goal
whoever
percentage, yes.
Whoever wins that field goal stat tonight from the two or the three or both, I think that's going to be the team that's really going to prevail because both these teams can get to the foul line. They both offensive rebounded pretty well. They've both been rebounding it really well. Mm-hmm. And I think the team that makes baskets and can get some easy baskets and possibly get to the foul line more than the other, I think that's going to be the difference in this game because these two teams, Jordy, are really evenly matched.
Just go back to the last game to your point. Classic example. You tell me LSU out-rebounds a team by 20-something and they lose and outshoots them at the free throw line by 20-something, and you tell me they're going to lose? Well, there's that great equalizer, right? There's that three-point line that tells me no lead too safe, no lead too big. Arkansas shot the lights out.
Well, they shot 57% from the floor, 53 from the three-point line. They make 7 a game. They made 13 against us, so that's an extra 18 points that they overcame. That they took away, and then we turned it over 21 times. So, you know, if they make any team on the road that makes 10 or more threes has a chance to keep the game workable, and that's certainly what Arkansas did. And then we had 21 turnovers, which led, I think, to 17 or 18 points. So those two things together made up for the differential in the rebound stat and the free throw stat.
John Brady, kind enough to join us. LSU at Mississippi State tonight, 8 o'clock tip here on 103.7 The Game. John in Starkville as we speak. uncharacteristic, 21 turnovers. They had really been good during their win streak in limiting turnovers. Is that just, I mean, how do you pinpoint that? Is that just getting lackadaisical? I thought they played hard. Is it something Arkansas did, or was it just a lack of focus? What do you think?
Well, I think most of, the majority are either all of our turnovers were really in the half court. You know, Nas Reed had five, which he certainly doesn't handle it in the full court, and mm-hmm. Tremont had five, and Skylar Mays had four. So those guys between them had 14 of our 21 turnovers. So we've got to take better care of the ball on the road. Nas has got to be tougher with the ball when they run mm-hmm. at him or try to stick a hand in there. Tremont's just got to make better decisions in the half court because, you know, our turnovers were in the half court in execution. And when you turn it over and that's 21 shots at goal, you don't get
right. Right.
You know, that may be a difference in that one-point game. We could score five or six more points had we shot the ball 11 more times. So, you know, Will Wade wants to keep it to 10, 11 turnovers a game. You get those 10 possessions back that we gave it to them with no shot, all of a sudden you may win the game by four or five. But you know, Jordy, 89 points at home, shooting 50% from the
should
field,
win.
Should
yeah.
be enough to win the game. And yeah. we just got to yeah. defend better. Yeah. You know, for extended periods of time and really do that consistently to beat teams like Arkansas at home that everybody thought, based on records, that we should win.
No question. But as Will Wade said, they've been on that tightrope for a while now. That Missouri game could very easily have been a loss. You could have very easily won the Arkansas game. You dig those big holes. Now, to their credit, they fought back. They never gave up. But, man, they got to get out to a – you can't get a bad start on the road like that against a team of this quality. You just can't.
Yeah, Will Wade summed it up right. He's exactly right. You know, you go to the well like that a couple of times, pretty soon it's going to run dry on you, and that's what happened the other night. But this will be an interesting game. It's a, you know, with what – see, sometimes I judge – this game by what lies ahead. You got Auburn
yeah.
coming. You got Kentucky on the road. I mean, you got Tennessee coming. So
yeah.
you've got some tough ones coming up. So the game against Arkansas made this game a little bit more important because of the next two or three games. This may be the best chance to get one in terms of being favored or not favored or whatever those statistics are that gives you the best chance to win. This may be one of those over the next two or three games.
Tennessee's playing great. Kentucky had they just absolutely had a smothering win on Tuesday. LSU's got to try and keep pace. This, you know what this league is like, man. And nobody really thinks much about Mississippi State. I do. I've been to that place. You've coached there before. I don't know why it mm-hmm. is, but that's a tough place, man. I don't know why, but it just is.
Well, we went over today to the game day practice, and they went over some things. They're trying to get into the game, And that arena with about 8,500 or so in it, it seats around that number, maybe a little less than 9, which is a perfect number in my book. It's
right.
a difficult place to play. Rick Stansbury had tremendous success at home when he was at Mississippi State.
He sure did.
Richard Williams down the stretch had tremendous success here at home. In fact, I was on the bench with Richard when we beat Shaquille, Chris, and Stanley in Humphrey Coliseum. So
I remember.
That's a tough place to play. And Coach Brown knows it. You know it. I know it. And you know, this LSU team, I hope they're ready for that because it's going to be, anytime LSU comes to town, particularly here at Mississippi State, they're looking forward to that game.
Isn't Richard doing the color for, like you? Doesn't he do that for State?
Yeah. I just had lunch with Coach Williams, had dinner with him last night, had lunch with him today, and he does the color for Travels with Mississippi State as I do at LSU.
Yeah.
And I told him today, I said, you have a chance tonight to be the second best color analyst on the floor today.
and both of you guys took teams to the Final Four. He had a good team back in the day now. Woo.
Yes, he did. He really did. You take Mississippi State to the Final Four in 1996.
Wow.
And the budget wasn't even close to other teams in the league. That's an accomplishment for a coach to make right there.
Pretty good recruiting, man. Pretty darn good recruiting. Okay, we talked about the matchups and how they're very, very similar. Who's the X factor today for LSU in your opinion? I know you got to get Waters has to play well. He's got to control the pace, control the ball. Who's the guy you're looking for? Boy, he's got to play well tonight or we're in trouble.
Well, I think the last couple of games, Skylar Mays hasn't shot the ball as well. He didn't shoot it well, particularly in Missouri. He didn't really shoot it well the other night. Even though he made some baskets late, I look for him to be the X factor here on the road. Our most experienced player, a guard that's a leader, quiet leader on this team. We need to be consistent tonight, and he's one of those guys that needs to have a consistent 40-minute game on the road, make timely three-pointers for us when we need them, and really play well defensively against Weatherspoon or Tyson Carter or whoever they choose to put him on. I think if Skylar Mays has a really good game tonight, I think it'll enhance our chances to win it.
Yeah, you mentioned the three-point shooting. Boy, they started off on fire. They've come back down to earth. In fact, they've been a little bit too low for my liking. So as a coach with a team that struggled of late, you take Tremont Waters, 6 of 10, made threes the other day out of the lineup, and they're shooting about 18-19% from behind the arc. That's just not going to cut it. So what is your approach as a coach? We're not shooting the ball well, but do you still say we still take them if they're there, or are you channeling the ball inside more?
Well, I would like to go inside and see what the bigs want to do close in first and then kick it out. But I really, Tremont Waters and Skylar Mays and they're good shooters, and they're better shooters than we've shown. As long as we're taking quality threes, you have to take them from time to time, regardless if they're going in or not, just to keep the other team honest, or they'll just back up off of you and choke off the middle as well. So we need to make timely threes on the road. I'm not saying, you know, you shoot 25 threes, but I'm saying we need to make timely threes in order to win a game like this tonight on the road. And Skylar May has got to be a big part of that.
All right, John, thank you very much. Starkville's not so bad now. When I went there, when I was playing, there was nothing. I mean, literally, there was nothing. But I always remember when you walked in and played and you're warming up, they didn't have the pep band. They had a jazz band on the court behind the goal, and they were playing some good tunes. Our guys loved it. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Bob Boyd was here when I was an assistant coach here, and he changed that, I believe. Instead of In the Mood, you know, that's not quite a fired-up song, In the Mood, before you're fixing to go to war. I don't believe that's what he wanted to hear.
No. They were playing some smooth jazz, man. We were like, man, that was good. Rudy Mackel was going up dunking. It was great. All right, Jonathan, you have a great call of the game, buddy. Thank you. Safe travels back to Louisiana, and good luck.
Okay. Thanks, Jordy. All right.
All right, buddy. You're the best. That's John Brady with an update. It's going to be a tough one. Will Waite said it's going to be the toughest road game to date until next week when they go to Lexington and Rupp Arena. But state home court advantage, there's no question about that. The numbers do not lie. 29-3 at home the past two seasons. 10-1 this year. The Bulldogs are 16-5 overall, 4-4 in SEC play. They dropped out of the top 25, but they're fresh off the heels of an 81-75 win at Ole Miss on Saturday. There you go. Watch out for Quindary Weatherspoon, averaging 21 points per game over his last five, including the 27-pointer against Ole Miss. They got a veteran club. We'll see if the Tigers can steal one on the road. That would be their fifth win on the road already in SEC play this year. Stay tuned. 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip here on 103.7 The Game. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, so we're getting jiggy with it here. 2:51 on this hump day, February the 6th. CD in the master control suite. He's spinning all the tunes, pushing the buttons. Yours truly right here. Anthony Davis is cleared, good to go, but he ain't playing tonight against the Chicago Bulls. Trade deadline tomorrow. We'll see. I never say never anymore. Never say never. There's a lot of pressure on both sides of this deal, and we'll see. And does another team enter the fray at the last minute? We shall see on that one. An update here on National Signing Day. LSU, of course, we just mentioned, was at 24 signatures with Devontae Lee, the wide receiver, hybrid, safety, whatever you want to do, from Amead High, becoming the 24th signature, leaving one spot available. Well, we just got in the news that the Tigers landed a commitment and a signature from Vigor High in Alabama, defensive end Desmond Little. His measurables, 6'6", 215 pounds. He was a three-sport athlete at Vigor High. Now, early in the process, he had scholarship offers. Now, how serious those offers were, we don't know, but he had LSU, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, Ole Miss, kind of a backup plan for LSU. He played football, basketball, and also was a standout in track and field. Ran 11.16 100 meter dash, 23.3 200 meter, 58.84 400 meter. For a kid 6'6, that's picking him up and putting him down. So good athlete. 247 sports analyst John Garcia followed Little in person throughout his time at Vigor and again in the state championships in December. He said he's definitely has the frame and overall athleticism that you covet on the edge in today's game. He will obviously need to bulk up and fill out and get stronger, but his three-sport background sort of hindered the physical development. Excuse me, you don't have to watch him long to see what he can do. His best football is well ahead. If he turns that corner at LSU, that's huge news for an 11th-hour pickup. This is about as good as you can hope for with his frame and athleticism. He's really a blank canvas. So, there it is. Desmond Little, edge rusher, all 6'6", 215 pounds. He's got length. And you know he's going to put some bulk on with his time with Tommy Moffitt and the rest of the LSU strength club. So, again, I don't know how people are feeling. I've never felt that one player make, unless it's a quarterback and you need one and you can't get one, then I think that's a different story. But we'll see how Ishmael Sopcich pans out. At Alabama, I know LSU put their very, very best foot forward. They just couldn't get him for whatever reason. Unbeknownst to me, it is what it is. But LSU finishes anywhere, and we'll talk with Billy Embody of 247 Sports to start off hour number two after Hot Topics. And we'll see where they have LSU slotted in the 247 and the 247 composite. Not that it means anything. What means something now is how do you develop these players? Plain and simple. How do you develop them? Some will become better than you thought. Some that you think are going to be great will fall off. How do you develop them? You know you're chasing Alabama every year. You know Georgia's there and A&M is there. You know Texas and Oklahoma are there. And you're right behind them. Those are the top five, according to most. Alabama, Georgia, A&M, Texas, Oklahoma. So it just kind of depends on where you stand from there. Time will tell. But coming up in hour number two of the program, we'll have our Hot Topics segment. We'll be joined by Billy Embody of Go 247 Sports. Get his thought on this class of 25 and much more on the very latest edition from the state of Alabama. And Michael Huguenin will join us from The Athletic and give us his viewpoint on the college football landscape and other things as well. National Signing Day Part 2. It's over. It's done. Maybe these coaches will take one day off before they start delving even more deeply into the class of 2020. The recruiting world, it really, really, truly never comes to an end. It just doesn't. Just doesn't. Amazing. But congrats to Billy Napier for filling his class. And I think Coach O did great. I really do. I think his staff did great. They kept most of the big guys that they wanted in the state of Louisiana in. They lost one. Okay. That's all right. It's okay. All right. We'll take a timeout. Hour number one is history. Come on back. Hour number two is going to be even more fun, even more exciting, even more entertaining, and even more informative. Knock on wood, we hope. We're going to try. This is the Jordy Helper Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
The habitations of the towns we know. A place we saw the lights turn low. The jigsaw.
And we are back. Hour number two of two. And away we go. This is the Jordy Helper Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. He is Clint Domain. And I'm here in Studio 1A. How hilarious is this? The Saints return from regular season games sometimes as late as 11 p.m., 1 a.m., and crowds of hundreds and thousands greet them at the airport. Did you see the Rams return from the Super Bowl? They're greeted by three people. They don't care about football in L.A., man, that's a Lakers town. Lakers town. All right, we got a busy second hour planned for you and yours. More on recruiting and more on college football and more on LSU basketball. But without further ado, let's get busy. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
All righty, my main man, CD, Chill Dog, kind enough to join us. So it looks like Billy Napier answered some of his needs. And I think Ed Orgeron got, you know, I know you lost one, but everybody else they kind of got. So I think they ought to be happy with where they are as well. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, Jordy. I'm doing good. And, you know, you brought up Billy Napier. It's like this probably is one of the best recruiting classes the Cajuns have ever had. And it's just been phenomenal to see what he was able to do in the early signing period. And then once National Signing Day came around, that big JUCO quarterback signing, Jaave Magalé, winds up making things a little bit more interesting once we get things started with spring practice and obviously fall camp once you get the JUCO guy aboard. It's definitely going to be a fun offseason to see who's going to wind up taking the reins for 2019 for the Cajuns quarterback rankings.
Yeah, agreed. Competition brings out the best. And I don't think that's going to be an issue with LSU. I think they've got their guys, so we'll see if they can plug and play some of these newcomers. I think you'll see about four or five that are big contributors early on, and go from there. We'll see.
And you brought up the fact that you had LSU miss out on the big fish, and that is Ishmael Shropshire. Obviously, got Devontae Lee and a whole lot of other big name players. And, you know, it got me thinking, Jordy, is this recruiting class another missed opportunity for LSU, or is it still probably one of the best recruiting classes they've had all around since 2011?
It's a good recruiting class. It's unfortunate that Shropshire was the second to last guy. It was on national television, so everybody could watch it, and he put on that darn Alabama visor, and that was that. So it gives you that feeling like, you know what, anytime Nick Saban wants somebody, he goes and gets them. But, you know, that's not the case. I had several players flip from Alabama and go to different schools today, one to Florida, one to Auburn. LSU got a couple of kids from the state of Alabama. So, you know, you can't win them all. You just can't. And this kid, Shropshire, milked it for all it's worth, and he picked what he thought was best for him. God bless him. Now we move on, we go with what we've got, and we make the best of it. That's all you can do.
Exactly, Jordy, and there's already so much talent all the way around this 2019 class. I think they'll be able to make do with what they got and be able to make a good run towards the college football playoff in 2019. That being said, Jordy, I saw this pop up earlier today, and I was thrown off by it, that Bob Stoops looks like he's going to be getting back into the coaching ranks, Jordy. You heard me right.
What?
Bob Stoops.
Where?
In the XFL, Jordy, as the head coach and GM of Dallas's franchise, Big Game Bob going to the XFL. Is this a weird move for you in your mind?
This is, you know what this is? This is to get used to the pro game so that when Jason Garrett gets fired, Bob Stoops becomes the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. How about that?
That sounds like a great recipe right there, Jordy. They're not going to renew him beyond next year. Jason Garrett gone. You send Bob Stoops to the Cowboys. And that winds up quieting everybody who wants to see Sean Payton be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
You know, Jerry Jones had a little bit of success with a former Oklahoma head coach. Didn't he win a Super Bowl with Barry Switzer? Maybe he thinks he can rejuvenate that with Big Game Bob.
If I'm not mistaken, Jordy, I think that's what's going to happen. That'd be huge. The Cowboys franchise, and think about it, wouldn't be that far of a move for one Bob Stoops.
And that guy, I want to keep Sean Payton. I like Sean Payton.
Who doesn't like
Sean Payton to go? Keep him here. Let's go.
You need this guy to be part of another franchise. But you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, Jordy. They want to put up a pretty solid trade at about 1 o'clock this morning with the Los Angeles Clippers, highlighted by Tobias Harris, jumping to Philly. To you, Jordy, is the process finally reaching its full potential?
Tell you what, they've got a heck of a starting five. Simmons, Embiid, J.J. Redick. I can never remember. I always forget the guy's name from Minnesota that came over in the trade.
Oh, Jimmy.
You got to help. Yeah, that's it.
Jimmy Butler.
And now Tobias Harris. So they've got every spot filled. That's a formidable starting five. I don't know what their depth is. But, you know, when playoff time comes, there's a lot of days off between games. Don't sleep on the Sixers now. I'm telling you, once they get kind of in a rhythm and get used to one another, that's not a bad lineup at all.
Especially when you compare it to the rest of the Eastern Conference, that is kind of some garbage at this point. The 76ers seem like they've got a relatively easy path heading into the All-Star break with a solid chance of making a deep run in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, Jordy. Yeah, but now we got
one of the contenders, no doubt.
Now we got to talk about the Pels again, Jordy. But this time, Lord. It's not about Anthony Davis. It's not about Anthony
Julius
Davis
Randle.
And Julius Randle, and even Nikola Mirotic, both on the trading block. To me, this seems like a move that you're trying to acquire assets to build the future of this franchise. That's the right move, Jordy. And obviously, Dell Demps ain't making this move.
I think this is Drew Holiday's team, and I think they're going to keep him. And then if they get rid of Randle, they get rid of Mirotic, I'm not losing sleep over either one. I'm sorry. Neither one of them are good enough to carry a franchise. They just aren't. Now, they're good pieces. Maybe you can put something together. You need star power in the city. You need to replace a superstar with another superstar somehow, some way. Dell Demps ain't pulling that trigger. He's not.
Exactly, George. That's the biggest thing. You got to deal with this right now when you look at the Pelicans. Dell Demps, he can't be pushing the button on anything. He needs to have somebody else take care of this. That's some big news 24 hours away from the trade deadline. But now we got to jump to the world of college basketball, Jordy, because a big game tonight between the LSU Tigers and the Mississippi State Bulldogs. We talked with John Brady about it earlier today, but what's the biggest point emphasis in your mind tonight for the Tigers when they take on the Bulldogs, who are a very good team?
Very simple. You got to shoot the ball well, and you can't turn it over. So that's it. I mean, plain and simple. I don't care what they say about this, that, and the other, and rebounding and defending. Good offense beats good defense in college basketball. You shoot the ball well, you don't turn it over, you got a chance. They turn the ball over 21 times like they did against Arkansas, they got no shot. They got no shot whatsoever. Value the basketball, good shots. Let's put the ball in the basket. They got a chance, but I don't like their chances tonight. State's really, really good at home. It's going to be a tough, tough environment, even though it's a Wednesday night late, and a lot of those people in the Bible Belt go to church on a Wednesday night. It's still going to be loud, but it's a tough one for me. Tough one for me. If I had to bet the ranks, I'm going to say Mississippi State close. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong too, Jordy. That's going to be a big ball game tonight. And last one here, Jordy. I saw this pop up as well earlier today, and that's about Matt Bryant from the Atlanta Falcons. He got cut, which is weird when you think about it. The guy, I know he's long in the tooth, but he's been such a great kicker for the Atlanta Falcons. Matt Bryant, that's a bit of a head scratcher there, Jordy.
Well, Atlanta is doing whatever they can. I mean, they obviously what they've got's not working, so they got to do something. They got a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator, going to get a new kicker. I don't feel sorry for them. Good riddance. Hit the door. Don't let it hit you when you walk out either. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing, but maybe they think they can find somebody better, obviously. But who that is, I don't have a clue. Don't come after my boy Lutz. I like Lutz.
Exactly. Keep away from him.
Yes, indeed. All right. There you have it. Thank you, CD. Our Hot Topic segment brought to you each and every day by the best hot sauce on the planet. And that is Cajun Chef. You know the Biard family right there in St. Martinville? Family-owned business, tradition handed down generation after generation. Nearly 90 years putting together the best product. They got so many things for your salad bar. I'm telling you, their jalapenos, their spicy green beans, everything they've got is just the best. The best. And they've got that Cajun Chef hot sauce. Oh, my goodness. I bring a small bottle with me wherever I go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Cajun Chef, it's the best. Time out on the floor. We'll come back. We'll spend 10 good minutes. Another recruiting update and a recap with Go247's Billy Embody next on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back, boys and girls. The National Signing Day, and let's get the thoughts and impressions of our good friend who does a tremendous job at Go247 Sports. Been a busy, long day for one Billy Embody, but he's kind enough to join us yet again today. Billy, how are you, my friend? Billy? All right. Let's see if we can get him here. Again, LSU has filled their commitment of 25 signatures, and they got one at the last hour. And let's see if Billy Embody is with us now. Billy, good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay, good. I know it's been a long day, and we greatly appreciate the time. LSU fills up its list of 25, so... before we get to the specifics, let's get your general overview. How do you think this all turned out?
It's kind of similar to how the 2018 class finished out. It's a very, very good class and far better, I mean, in terms of rankings and addressing needs and elite talent than the 2018 class. But that miss, that National Signing Day miss on the Big Fish, similar to Pat Surtain last year, they miss on Ishmael Sopcher. That's going to be the thing that kind of will hang over. I think a lot of the people that follow recruiting, but at the end of the day, this is a very, very, very talented class coming to Baton Rouge, and LSU will just have to put in plenty of work for the 2020 class in the defensive line area, just like they did at corner and defensive back for the 2019 class.
Billy, I never heard one mention, because I don't delve into it, never heard one mention of a kid by the name of Desmond Little. He was the 25th signature. I know you know of him. Tell me about him and why him, and give me some specifics.
So Desmond Little is a 6'5", 215-pound, really pass rusher from the Mobile area that LSU offered actually a year ago today, and they had him on campus for camp over the summer. They liked what they saw, but they didn't love it, and they said, you know what, we're going to kind of cool on him a little bit, but stayed in contact throughout the process. And when things were going sideways with Ishmael Sopcher this morning, they said, look, we think we're going to have a spot for you. This is a name that, like I said, had an offer. They were just kind of keeping it quiet because, you know, look, I mean, you don't want to get a kid's hopes up, right, and kind of have it leak out and this and that, and then, you know, somehow you still end up not having a spot. But Desmond was somebody that was really high on LSU as he came to campus for camp this summer. And, you know, when they made the call to bring him on board, I mean, he was all for it, so that he quickly signed and was in the class. He's a heck of a track athlete. He's got a really good 400-meter time. He plays basketball. He's quick. His film is really good. And, you know, a lot of people are going to say, okay, well, obviously he's only in because Ishmael Sopcich didn't get in, and yeah, I mean that's the case.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he is somebody that they got a chance to look at in camp. They liked his senior film, and ultimately said, you know what, if he's going to take the spot and he's good with it, we want him.
There you go. Billy Embody, 247 Sports, joining us. I guess the same could be said for Jay Ward. Maybe they got the news that the Alabama commit that flipped and went to Miami, Williams wasn't coming, so Jay Ward was there as a backup. Is that fair to say that?
Yes, I would say that, absolutely. I will say that, I mean, they really like both of them, and it just came down to a numbers thing in terms of why Jay Ward was backburnered. But I think you talk to a lot of people around the country, and most are going to tell you that they're probably higher on Jay Ward. And it was always something that kind of I was even a little confused about as we left the early signing period as to why, you know, LSU just didn't press to get Jay Ward on board. It just seemed like that was a more natural corner, that was a more natural fit for LSU. And lo and behold, he ends up in the class, and he really had favored LSU for quite some time, and so I think he was even counting on being in the class, leaving the early signing period and all of that. But it took until the 11th hour for it to work out for him.
I think Ray Parker's another one. If you know, they were after all these defensive linemen, they were after four, they got one that opened up a spot for Ray Parker. I think he's going to be a really good player before it's all said and done. I love his frame, and he's got some more room to grow into that frame. Is that another example there?
Yeah, it's interesting that they ended up taking Ray Parker. I mean, there are certainly question marks around his grades and what he's got to do in the classroom to be ready to go. But, you know, that they must feel good about the plan that Rustin is putting in place to get him ready to go and get him on board and into Baton Rouge, you know, because it really is, you know, something where, you know, there are a lot of question marks around his grades. But, I mean, he's got plenty of upside, plenty of talent, and if they can get him on campus this summer, even if he's somebody that, you know, maybe has to take an academic redshirt to do it, he's worth it.
Maurice Hampton, that was a big get, right? He's a very highly coveted corner out of Memphis. We've talked before, baseball, football. If the offer is really good with Major League Baseball, then you may lose out on him. But as of right here, right now, it looks like Paul Maneri might be smiling.
Paul Maneri is probably happier than Coach O, I would imagine, that this all worked out for LSU now. And now it's just a matter of weighing that MLB draft in June. I mean, Hampton's really talented. He's a day one probably starter in the outfield for LSU baseball, depending on how things kind of shake out with their guys, you know, returning MLB draft and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, super talented guy that LSU fans will love.
I guess everybody's talking about Sopcich, but are we overlooking the importance of Devontae Lee signing with LSU? I mean, what if Sopcich had gone first and Lee had gone second? That may have taken some of the sting out of it, but that's a good get, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's versatile. He's talented. He's physical. That's the thing that really stands out about Devontae Lee. Sometimes a lot of these prospects don't adjust well to the physicality of the SEC, you know, and that goes for players across the country at different schools, you know, and getting to this level. Devonta Lee is somebody I'm not worried about in that regard. I mean, he is as physical as it gets. He's a good looking kid. I mean, he's gonna, you know, he's a first one off the bus type guy. So, yeah, big for them to get him, and kind of similar to Jamar Chase last year, that Jamar was kind of lost in the reaction of Pat Surtain not committing to LSU and going to Alabama. And while Devontae isn't a five-star prospect, he is a very, very good prospect and one that should be celebrated as such.
What do you think was the difference? I know LSU did everything in their power for Sopcich. What do you think was the tipping point for him to go to Alabama?
I think his dad was high on Alabama and has some connections there and felt that was the best place for his son to be developed. And ultimately it was Ishmael's decision, but I mean, that's what it came down to. And I believe that. And I think a lot of the 11th hour stuff is stuff that we're accustomed to seeing now with some of these high profile LSU Alabama battles. And it's that, you know, you hear about momentum this going, you know, gaining with LSU and, only to kind of take the pressure off of what is a big decision and leaving the state of Louisiana. And, sure enough, they end up, you know, picking Alabama and that kind of being it. So, you know, it's just a matter of now. I mean, we've just got to quit being fooled. And, you know, LSU has had some recruiting wins over Alabama and in a legit way this year. I mean, Derek Stingley, John Emery, I mean, Marcel Brooks even. I mean, those are guys that, you know, Bama would have taken, and there are a couple others too. But, you know, as far as Ishmael, I mean, it stings because, you know, it just, the staff, I'm sure too, you know, you get your hopes up and you recruit a kid for 3 or 4 years, and especially one that Ed Ogeron has recruited for so long. And, you know, it's for you kind of to host him on the last visit, have the last in home and do all those things, and
right,
to not get him, it's got to be a big blow.
Yeah, Billy Embody, go 247 Sports. All right, let's get down to the brass tacks. We know Alabama's the number one team in the country. Where does 247 have LSU regular and in the composite? Where do they stand now that this is all said and done in 2019?
I looked at the composite right before we got on, and it was number five, and I think that's where it's going to end up sticking. I'm not sure if Desmond pushed it over the top to that number four spot, but right behind Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, and they leapfrogged Oklahoma when they landed Devontae Lee. So right there, top five class in the country. You signed your full 25. I think with this class, they got players that, you know, just looking at it, doesn't look like a bust from afar either. So we'll see.
Okay. Fifth in the nation, fourth in the SEC. How about that? That's crazy.
That's the way the cookie crumbles nowadays with these recruiting classes in the SEC. They're crazy.
Go get some rest, buddy. Thank you so much for all your help and your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Anytime, Jordy. Talk to you soon.
Okay, buddy. Take care. We'll take a quick time out here. Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is. Guess what day it is.
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
And a very important hump day it is, Michael Huguenin, National Signing Day Part 2, and it just looks like the SEC just keeps on rolling on. Good day, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. And yeah, I think the National Signing Day has lessened in importance with the early signing period. I think it was 78% of the guys going D1 signed back in December, but it's still obviously an important day, and now we have a fuller picture of everybody's classes. And yeah, five of the top nine teams in the consensus rankings are from the SEC, and six of the top 12.
LSU is right there in the top five or six or seven, depending upon who you follow, but that puts them third in the SEC West behind Alabama and the hard-charging Texas A&M Aggies. What is it about Jimbo Fisher that he's getting it done when his predecessor couldn't recruit at all at A&M?
Someone wasn't a horrible recruiter. He just wasn't an elite-level recruiter like Fisher. Fisher brought in phenomenal classes every year at Florida State, but at the end he tapered off, and last year's FSU team was his players, and that was a horrible team. And that was his last big recruiting class at Florida State was 2015. It ranked third in the nation. It's going to have three guys total drafted out of that class. Three. So not only obviously getting the kids on campus is vital, coaching them up, helping them develop, also is vital. I think if you're an LSU fan and you're used to having a highly ranked class, but I would argue that under Miles at the end of his tenure, those guys weren't always developed as well as it could have been. The key for A&M now is turning the results off the field in terms of recruiting into results on the field. As well as Texas A&M played last year in Fisher's first year, they still lost four games.
Is that why, you know, you mentioned Jimbo tailed off. One school that never tails off is Alabama. Then the number one ranked recruiting class, again, that's like eight of the last 9 years. It is absolutely remarkable what that coach has done there. Is it because they do the development aspect and they do give you a chance not only to win championships but to get to the NFL? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, I think you're selling a lot of stuff at Alabama. You're selling the idea that you're playing for the greatest college football coach ever. You're playing for a program that annually is in the playoff. You don't hope to be in the playoff at Alabama. You expect it. They have phenomenal facilities. They have a phenomenally deep staff. They got a ton of, when I say staff, I mean analysts and all that kind of stuff. So you're going to get a lot of attention from a lot of high-powered folks. And then it's up to the player. And for the most part, the players there do pan out, but there are some that don't. But if you're at Alabama, okay, that five-star didn't pan out, that four-star didn't pan out. Okay, we'll just recruit over them next year. And that seemingly does happen on an annual basis. They sign 26 guys, and 25 of them are four- or five-star guys.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. As good as A&M's class is, they signed 26 guys. 10 of them are three stars. At Alabama, one of 26 is a three star.
And they'll get developed, and he'll end up being a first round draft pick. It's amazing. You know, LSU has what many would think they'd be envious of having, and yet it comes down to the last player on their list, and it comes down to LSU versus Alabama, and it's Sopcich, the big defensive lineman from Amite, Louisiana, goes to Alabama. So it feels like, to the populace that follows LSU football, another loss to Nick Saban, another loss to Alabama, and boo-hoo. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, and I think LSU, the consensus top 10 players in Louisiana, LSU signed eight of them. The other two signed with Alabama. And, yeah, I mean, I think if you're an LSU fan, you're ecstatic. We signed eight of the top 10 kids in the state. The state produces high-level football players. And frankly, if two of them had gone out of state and gone anywhere but Alabama, nobody cares.
Right.
But because they chose the hated Tide, and that makes it vastly, vastly worse. No question.
It just does. You're absolutely right. I'm loving what's going on in the state of Texas. My goodness, what a dogfight with Tom Herman over there at UT and Jimbo Fisher at A&M, and you've got Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. Those three teams are going to finish in the top 10 in recruiting. I know Texas has a lot of players, but, man, it's getting interesting.
Yeah, it is. And as of right now, actually, Texas is third, A&M fourth, and Oklahoma fifth. Oklahoma's offensive recruiting skill position was incredible. Three of the top 11 wide receivers in the country, including two of the top four, and the best quarterback. So they're going to continue to roll out big numbers offensively. The defensive recruiting has picked up the last two classes, and now they have a new coordinator. But you're right, I mean, Texas and Texas A&M are always going to get the bulk, I think, of the good Texas players, though Oklahoma is going to get its share of the top 10 or 15. And everybody else is left to fight for the scraps. If you're Baylor, Texas Tech, SMU, TCU, Oklahoma State, whoever else comes in there. But it is, frankly, incredible that A&M and Texas and Oklahoma all are in the national top five, and Texas is their recruiting backyard. So it's obvious they're keeping all the good players at home, at least in this cycle. And my assumption is as long as Fisher's at A&M, as long as Herman's at Texas, the good players are going to stay, quote-unquote, home again like they used to when Mack Brown was at Texas.
Yeah, it doesn't seem the same with Florida, Florida State, Miami. That used to be the big thing, but that's just not there anymore, is it?
No. Florida had a good class, though. I think you could say their defensive line class defensive tackles, only signed one. That's a big problem. Florida State, for the second year in a row, did not sign a quarterback. That is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Miami's class, they're making a big deal. Oh, we lived in the transfer portal. Right now their class is barely inside the top 30. They made a big deal today. Oh, we signed Trevon Hill, a Virginia Tech transfer. Well, he's not really a Virginia Tech transfer. He was a Virginia Tech player who was dismissed by Justin Fuente for being a bad guy.
Yeah.
So, and for the most part, they're making a big deal. They got a transfer offensive tackle from Butler. Butler does not have scholarships. You're telling me that a kid that played at Butler with no scholarships is good enough to start at Miami? Okay, maybe he is. Well, what does that say about the guys already on your roster? But, yeah, Miami's class right now barely inside the top 30. FSU's class barely inside the top 20. That should never happen at those schools. I don't care if Miami gets to change coaches. You can walk 20 miles from the Miami campus and sign high-level guys. So the fact that Miami is behind Purdue, for goodness sake, that's embarrassing.
But they got a punter from down under who looks like he's 38 years old.
And he looks like he's a Hell's Angels
guy.
he's a big physical dude, and yeah, that's he will. He is sort of, you know, Miami. You know, I'm a Miami native, grew up down there, and you know, Miami has this certain image as a city, and it's true. It is a advanced place to live. Let's put it that way. And yeah. You know, people in Miami like to think we're the coolest of all that kind of stuff, and this sort of feeds. Look at our punter. This guy's the baddest man on the team.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is he might be, and he's a punter. So, again, though, I mean, for all the, you know, Miami's make, oh, we got Tate Martell. Well, no one's sure Tate Martell's going to be eligible. Ooh, we got Bubba Bolden from USC. Yeah, I don't know if USC truly cared that he left. They got a kid who was, again, dismissed at Virginia Tech. They got a transfer from a school that doesn't give football scholarships. So, for all this crowing about how this is a great class, no, it's not. The three best kids in Dade County, none of them signed with Miami.
Michael Huguenin, the Athletic, kind enough to join us. You mentioned the transfer portal. It seems like more each and every year there's more and more and more to it. There's a whole bunch of people transferring this year.
Yeah, Charlie Strong, the USF coach, I guess, was talking about his recruiting class today, and he admitted there was a couple spots where they did not get the numbers they wanted. And he said, well, we're just going to have to hit the transfer portal. There are more than 1,400 names in there.
Wow.
1,400.
Man.
So that's a lot of dudes who are looking for new schools. So I don't think, you know, you had James Franklin today at his signing day news conference bemoaning the state of college football because of all the transfers, all that kind of stuff. Though left unsaid, obviously, is that Franklin and his half his staff up in Los Vanderbilt with no repercussions,
which
is the way the coaches has always been, but now the players are sort of being able to do that as well. But obviously not all 1,400 are going to change schools. But it is interesting that if you put your name in the transfer portal, the school technically then can say, fine, you don't have a scholarship. And even if you want to come back, you're not guaranteed a scholarship. Though I would think in most cases, if a kid wants to come back and the school wants them, of course they're going to get the scholarship. But that's also a way to do effective roster management. So, but again, the sheer number, Charlie Strong said 1,400 players are in the transfer portal.
Amazing. Michael Huguenin, The Athletic. I'm curious as to how USC has fared with Cliff Kingsbury signing on and then leaving. I know one of the top 2020 recruits from the state of Louisiana in New Orleans, a wide receiver, decommitted. How'd the Trojans fare? Are they in trouble?
They're not going to find any five-star guys. It's, I think, the third best class in the Pac-12. Now, Oregon out-recruited them. Washington out-recruited them. Oregon did exceptionally well in Southern California. Exceptionally well. It's including signing the best player in L.A., Kayvon Thibodeau, the defensive end. So USC's class, no question, hurt by Kingsbury leaving. No question, hurt by Helton's lack of job security. But the Pac-12 as a whole did not recruit all that well, other than Oregon and Washington. And Washington, Chris Peterson has made a living at Boise and at UW, taking three-star guys and turning them into potential first-round picks. Yeah. If he gets four- and five-star guys, I mean, Chris Peterson and his staff, these are elite coaches. Jimmy Lake, their defensive coordinator, if Jimmy Lake was a defensive coordinator in the SEC, people would be throwing roses at his feet. This guy is awesome. But because he coaches at Washington, no one really knows who he is. But they're going to have three defensive backs drafted in the draft. They played, that's a 5-DB team. They played a 4-2-5, a 3-3-5 set, rather. All five of the starters on the secondary this year are going to get drafted when they come out of school. I mean, he's a great coordinator. So my point of all that was going to be, if Chris Peterson can take three-star guys and make them first-rounders, now he's getting better players. Washington isn't going anywhere. And Mario Cristobal, people in the SEC know, that guy is a flat-out awesome recruiter. They signed, I think, three kids from Florida, they got two or three kids from Georgia, one from Alabama, a bunch from Southern California. And if Cristobal stays there, Oregon's going to be a recruiting machine. So that puts more pressure on USC and UCLA. UCLA's class was bad. Chip Kelly's not a great recruiter, and it really showed. But if you're UCLA should be able to fall into a top 25 class, but they did not.
UCLA basketball, UCLA football. Wow, what a precipitous drop from the elite in both of them. Mike, this story came out, and I was just very curious as to your thoughts about Southern Miss interviewing Art Briles for their offensive coordinator position and then saying, yeah, you're not a candidate now. Thanks, but no thanks. The coach is upset about it.
Yeah, that's...
What's going on there?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I get the fact that people deserve second chances, but if I'm Southern Miss, I would not be the school. I'm not. If I'm the AD or the school president, and my coach comes to me and says I'm going to interview Al Brawls, I'm like, no, you're not. He can get a second chance elsewhere. But you're right. It's interesting. There's an interim AD at Southern Miss, so I think there's a power vacuum there. But the school president came out this morning and said, well, you know, Art Briles is not a candidate for the job here. And then you had the coach say, well, our president made a gigantic mistake. Art Briles is a great guy. He was never charged himself, all this kind of stuff. So it's a horrible look, I think, for Jay Hobson. Southern Miss has not been all that good on the field under him. And I think he just put a ton more pressure on himself. It's interesting.
Will Art Briles ever coach again?
I don't think he'll coach Power Five, but the idea thing is though that the backlash wherever he's hired is going to be tremendous. And I'm thinking I cannot imagine there being a Power Five AD willing to put up with it. And here's a Group of Five school president not willing to put up with it. I don't know if he gets another job. Then again, I mean, Liberty's out there, and Liberty has the former Baylor AD. Maybe Art Briles will work for Hugh Freeze for a year.
Wow, amazing, Michael Hugonen, The Athletic. Speaking of coaches, I'm still amazed. If it were anybody other than the name of Bill Self, how in the Sam Hill is he still coaching at Kansas with all that stuff going on with that DeSilva player and the money being paid out, the kid being ineligible this year and next year? Bill Self is directly involved with it. How is he still coaching basketball at Kansas?
Yeah, you and I have talked about this for a decade now, the hypocrisy of school officials. They always talk about following NCAA rules, not breaking the rules, staying within the lines, all that kind of stuff. And yet, you know, there's assistant coaches that have pleaded guilty to federal charges, and yet the head coaches they work for are still in place. I also wonder if Sean Miller is going to keep his job at Arizona. So, but you're right. I mean, again, it goes back to the hypocrisy. You know, Houston basketball is a good team this year. Kelvin Sampson has been fired twice for breaking NCAA rules.
And yet he's
the head coach of Houston. So that's why sometimes the stuff administrators say and conference officials say and school presidents say you sort of like, yeah, right, whatever you say. Yeah, like, I really believe you. Sarcasm alert there. So, but you're right. I mean, you read some of the stuff about what's going on with the FBI case, and you do wonder how some of these head coaches still have their jobs. Because you cannot tell me that an assistant coach at Arizona or an assistant coach at Kansas went rogue and did all this stuff in a vacuum that the head coach didn't know about. If the head coach and AD didn't know about it, then they failed at their job. They should be fired for being dumb.
Bruce Pearl at Auburn, another case classic example.
That's another one, yes.
Chuck Person hanging out there to dry, baby. All right, Michael Hugan, another the rich get richer. I guess that's how you sum up this this recruiting world that we live in. The rich just keep getting richer.
Yeah, you know, the Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, the three best programs in the Big Ten, all have the three best classes in the Big Ten. The SEC recruits an extremely high level again. Though I will say, sometimes though in the SEC, a high-level recruiting class or two or three high-level recruiting classes in a row, it doesn't always pay off. So let's look. You know, Auburn always recruits well. And yes, Gus Malzahn will be on the hot seat going into next season. You wonder who his quarterback's going to be.
They
certainly got some intriguing parts, but they may be playing for a new coach, those guys that signed today in 2020.
Michael Hugan from The Athletic, must-read material. Thank you for your time, as always, my friend. We'll figure out something next week, all right?
Excellent, thanks.
All right, you're the best. That brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything you need for your departure, for your travels, whether it's 5, 50, or 500 miles. Plus that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. I'm telling you, if you haven't had the cheeseburger yet, you've really missed out, but they've got so much more. Fresh, cooked to your order, dine in, take it to go, hit the road, Jack, but come on back to D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back. Finishing touches on a very, very busy day. Don't forget about LSU basketball tonight right here on 1037 The Game, 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip. Billy Napier coming up to talk about the Raging Cajuns recruiting class on Ben's show. On this date, February 6, 1988, oh, I was watching it. I know, I'm aging myself, but it was the NBA dunk contest, and it was a super showdown. The year before, Dominique Wilkins won it. This time, his airness, Michael Jordan, beat the human highlight film in a showdown for the ages at the 1988 NBA dunk contest. It was some kind of sweet. Yes, indeed. All right, birthday wishes. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us here at 1037 Game to all of you. This is a day known for those who are no longer with us, but some huge, huge names like George, Babe, Herman, Ruth would have been celebrating a birthday today. Ronald Reagan would have been celebrating a birthday today as well, as would Bob Marley. Yes, indeed. So we celebrate the late and the great. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. So LSU finishes 7th, 8th, whatever it may be, in the recruiting world. We'll see how LSU bounces back tonight. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Have a great one, and stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.